You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Take one. Knock, knock.
Who is?
Receiving a Dana, and we can't believe you found a fucking podcast.
Not podcast.
We're so glad you're listening to it. We would never listen to it.
I don't even want to listen to it to edit it.
I don't even want to wake up in the morning.
We're Stephen and Dana, and we're in the room.
Jason. Jason. Burning sensation just confirmed.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Stephen.
Just real quick up top. First of all, happy Earth Day.
Woo! Donate to the NYRP if you can. It cleans up New York City. But if you don't live in New York City, donate to your local environmental fund.
Yeah, like don't use plastic today.
Plant a flower. Plant a tree for Israel.
Well, by the time you're listening to this, it's long past Earth Day, but it is not long past your birthday, which is today in podcast time.
This episode drops on my birthday, and this is the most special time of year for this 35-year-old. I love April so much.
I love you so much.
And I love you so much.
I also love...
We're going very fast because our guest is super fancy and we don't want to waste any of his time.
Exactly. Speaking of people we love, our friend Val threw a fierce Easter brunch.
She did.
And I have to say thank you publicly because I'm still full.
And you made a knockout cheesecake, my friend.
I did. I was proud of that cake.
It was very good. What else? I saw Harry Potter, parts 1 and 2. You guys, the magic.
Keep the secrets.
I'll keep the secrets. And I'm not even like a Harry Potter person, but please, 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 please go. It'll knock you out. I also saw the Cher show.
You've been very busy at the theater.
So delightful. I have a lot of friends who have last minute, oh, my friend can't make it, want to come. And I, you know, get on that CE. And
you're anywhere in 20 minutes.
And I approach. And Cher was there, you guys. More on that later. That was so exciting. I wept. I cried. People were hugging me in the bathroom. They're like, are you okay? No. I've never seen her in person. At her own show.
I haven't either.
At her own show. What else have I seen? Oh, we saw Gary. Did we talk about it?
We talked about it.
We'll talk about it again.
The end. Speaking of people who have risen... Ladies and gentlemen, Jerry Mitchell. Jerry Mitchell.
Hello.
You know, this is a rising star in the Broadway community. We wanted to give him a shot on our podcast.
Yeah.
Just to get his name out there if you guys are looking for choreographers or a director.
He's EMC.
You guys, he's got
such
points.
Such dicks. We're terrible.
What's EMC? Is that equity?
Equity candidacy. You have the points, but you haven't...
Yeah,
jumped in yet.
Quite joined the union.
Yeah, because you're trying to get that contract that'll pay that initiation.
Well, I practiced this at work today, but Jerry Mitchell has done, and yes, I printed these out. Okay, I'm just going to start with Broadway, right? Okay. Pretty Woman the musical, On Your Feet, Kinky Boots, Catch Me If You Can, Priscilla, Queen of the Dessert, Legally Blonde, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, La Cage aux Folles, Never Gonna Dance, Gotta Turn the Page, Gypsy, Imaginary Friends, you guys, Hairspray, Rocky Horror Picture Show, nope, The Rocky Horror Show, that's the difference, The Full Monty, You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, Grease, Three Men on a Horse, The Will Rogers Follies, you guys, Jerome Robbins, Broadway, Jerry, On Your Toes, Woman of the Year, Brigadoon, Barnum.
To name a few.
Some of those I danced in.
Some of those danced in. And then the ones that are more up top.
Choreographer. Or
I danced backstage.
Yeah, and director. You're the Wizard of Oz.
I mean, that's really my burning question. Obviously, we know that you had a performing career and that evolved into a choreography career. What I don't know is what that journey looked like, if it was always the plan, if it was something you learned you wanted to do after performing a while. What was your road?
I was a choreographer from about the age of 8.
Good time to start.
I really was. I would choreograph in my hometown, then I choreographed in school, then I choreographed in college. Directed also, but, you know, just dance. Dance was certainly where I lived.
Yeah.
And it brought me to New York. I danced, you know, in 5 Broadway shows and worked with the greatest choreographers and directors. And I think I was 23 when I was in On Your Toes, which was the last show. I said, no more. I'm not going to dance anymore. I'm going to focus on my choreography. Because there was a number in On Your Toes where Donald Sadler, who choreographed it, Balanchine originally choreographed the ballets, and Donald Sadler choreographed the new stuff. There was a number, Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms, that wasn't quite clicking. And I sort of gave an idea to the producer, John Malcheri, who liked it, and said, oh, I'm going to share that idea with Donald. And I shared it with Donald later, and so he sort of liked the idea, so we tried to incorporate it into the number. And it was such an interesting experience for me to see an idea become a number that I had a small part in, not a large part, but just a small part of the idea. And I thought, this is really what I want to do, so and I wanted to focus on that. And plus, in all the shows I had danced in, working with Michael Bennett, working with, you know, Donald, working with learning the Balanchine ballets, working with Agnes DeMille, working with Ron Field, and eventually Jerry Robbins, I wanted to work with them more than I wanted to be in the show dancing. My focus just changed, and so I started focusing on that full time. Went back to performing when I was 30 for one show, the Will Rogers Follies, because my dear friend Jeff Calhoun was the co-choreographer with Tommy Toon and asked me to do it, and I said yes. And it just was the right time in my life, which led to the creation of Broadway Bears, which was a huge, huge stepping stone
and
for me in my life.
TikTok. I mean, TikTok. People are starting to post that they are raising money.
Seeing those Instagram photos.
Yeah. No theme has been announced.
No.
But we're looking forward. But not here. Not the podcast.
Now is not the time.
News.
Now is not the time. But, yes, Broadway Bears. Equity Fights AIDS.
Yes,
but it's a huge, huge event here in town.
Started 27 years ago, 92, I think, was the first one, and I did two that year, and 6 months apart. I did the first one at Splash. I got six other guys, and we danced. We each did a solo strip, and I choreographed an opening sequence. When we were trying to raise money for Easter Bonnet, find interesting ways to raise money for Easter Bonnet, and my dressing roommates, John Ganon, Troy, Jason Opsahl, Troy Johnson, you know, they suggested maybe you should wear that Indian costume down to the bar and go on the bar and go-go dance, and literally a light bulb went off on my head. I called some other guys who were in equally magnificent shape. I was in pretty good shape.
Yeah, why not? Put it to good use, honey.
I was naked in the Will Rogers Follies every night. So, you know, being in good shape was part of the gig. And I put on a little show. We made about $8,000. I said, I can do this better. I'll add girls. I added girls and did one 6 months later at Shout, which was where Urinetown played. We raised about $17,000, and they said, I can do this better still, I'll do a theme. We changed, created a theme. The third one was the lusty month of May. It happened in May, and we did it at Bump, which is where the W Hotel is now. That was Bump, a disco there. And we were there 2 years, then we were at the Palladium 2 years, then we were at Webster Hall 2 years, then we were at Roseline for many, many, many
years. That was my first.
When Roseline closed down, we moved to the Hammerstein Ballroom. But, you know, we needed to find a place to accommodate the people. We get 6,000 people at Broadway Bears, two crowds of 3,000. Last year we made $1.89 million in one night. So
it's a bump up from 7,000.
Yeah, we made about,
good for you.
About 17 million stripping. And, you know, it's a good cause. And it's
absolutely
so much
money. a way to, it was the thing I wanted to do most. I wanted to give back to my community. I wanted to help my friends.
And it came about so organically. That's what's so surprising.
It really did. And it was the perfect moment. Just that perfect moment in time when you're needed and you use your craft, you use your art, you use your what you have to create something and make a difference.
And when is it this year?
It'll be Father's Day this year. It's always a week or 2 weeks after the Tonys.
Okay.
And it'll be on Father's Day, this Sunday.
And where can people get tickets?
Well, you can go to BroadwayCares.org or BroadwayCaresEquityFightsAIDS.org. The tickets are up already. You can buy
9:30 or midnight.
They sell out.
Yes, they do.
But people travel.
The VIPs sell out. This is a big Pride Month too. Mm-hmm. So there'll be people in town for that who will come, and yeah, it's going to be a great
I'm kind of scared because World Pride is in New York City this year.
Yeah, very exciting.
You guys.
It's going to be busy summer.
Brace yourselves.
Yeah. What's so clear to me about Broadway Bears is how much you still love doing it.
Well,
It has not gotten old for you. It has not become obligatory for you. You love it with your whole heart.
There's something very, very special that happens when the community comes together without any, any bullshit.
Sure.
They come together for the cause. They come together for the event. They come together to be, it's one of the only events of the annual events where we cross-pollinate, I say.
Mm-hmm.
Cast members from Cher can dance with cast members from Pretty Woman, can dance with cast members from Brahm. You can end up in numbers with people you don't know. And some of the greatest friendships and relationships started at Broadway Bears, where people met other people they never got a chance to say hello to. And what better way to do it when you're standing there in a G-string?
Yeah, you're right.
You better say hello.
Oh, yeah. And get on everyone's good side.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, there's so much to talk about.
I want to give you the floor because... Yes.
Well, I mean, I would love to talk about Kinky Boots for a second. It did just close, but I was telling Dana on the way here, like, I've been in New York about 12 years, and I didn't realize that Kinky Boots has been a present part of that life for half.
Yeah. Half the time.
And that blows my mind, but it is so... I'm still feeling it closing, and as somebody who has nothing to do with Kinky Boots...
and yet everything.
All my friends worked there.
Yeah, we kind of met tangentially.
It was... Kinky Boots. Yeah, it's played a very large role in the relationships I've made here.
Yeah, well, any show that runs for 6 years, there's going to be a lot that comes along
those
with
ripples.
That run.
Reach.
It is a special show. It's a very special show. Something I'm completely in love with. I just got back from Japan, where we've mounted it for the third time. This is the second time in Japanese. The first time we did it in Japanese. Second time we were there was the American tour that went there and played Tokyo and Osaka. And now this is the second mounting with the original first cast in Japan. The stars came back.
Wow.
And everyone came back. And only two people couldn't come back. And one person full-time and the other person is doing 6 performances and being covered by a new angel who's doing the other two. But basically, the show sold out for the entire run. They put it on sale 1 year before they opened it because they knew that the two leads, Haruma and Tepe, were coming back, and they are famous in Japan. One is a movie star, one was a boy band singer.
I love that.
And they're just sensational. They're great people. Cast is wonderful. The culture over there is so special. Mm. They treat you so beautifully.
Mm.
Really, really love what they do, and it's very special.
You've had a lot of international success. I mean, Hairspray has been in God knows how many languages, and
yeah.
Kinky Boots and Legally Blonde.
Kinky Boots even more than Hairspray, surprisingly. More success.
How does one, translating a show and teaching a show with a language barrier?
Well, I have two amazing associates who have been with me through the whole run. D.B. Bonds is my associate director, and Rusty Mowry, my associate choreographer. They have done most of those companies. I come in at the beginning and the end to add that thing mm-hmm. they want me there for. And but D.B. and Rusty are there through most of the translation. In Germany, where we're getting ready to do the first international production of Pretty Woman, I'm working with the same people, the people at Stage Entertainment, and you get a back translation where they translate the script in their language and you see it all, and then you ask questions of the translator, and then they help you arrive at the script that will be performed. Same thing with Japan. The funniest story of that is actually Legally Blonde. When we did Legally Blonde in Vienna, they did not think gay or European would be funny in Vienna. And I said, but okay, it's such a funny number. And they said, well, we're European. It won't be funny here. Gay or French will be funny here. And I said, oh, okay.
Fair enough.
So they translated it to basically gay or French. And the audience was going absolutely hilariously laughing. And I was like, I don't believe it, but there you have it. You know, that you have to trust that the translator is able to understand your language, but also understand how that language works in their language. And then there's some trust there, and you get into previews usually, and you see how it lands.
Mm-hmm.
And that was always a phenomenal, funny, funny translation story for me that I still to this day think, oh, that's just...
Got to change the perspective.
Yeah.
A little bit.
What was your first show to go international? Was it?
I think the first one was the Full Monty, actually. I mean, we went to Australia with the Full Monty. We went to London with the Full Monty. We did Broadway. We did a national tour. Then Jack and I went to London with the original boys from New York, with the exception of Patrick Wilson, who didn't go. I think he might have been doing his first movie, and Jared Emick did Jerry. And then we went to Australia with an entire Australian company. Matt Hetherington played Jerry in Australia, who won Best Actor, and Matt is now playing the father for me in my next musical here in America called Becoming Nancy. He now lives here with his wife. They live in Brooklyn and their kids. And he's been cast as the father in Becoming Nancy. I'm so excited. It's really thrilling.
That's another thing I love about your shows is the sense of loyalty and family.
Yes.
It appears you don't work with people that don't get it, that aren't of the cloth.
Well, I will say I fall in love with actors. I always fall in love with actors. And if I'm working with someone and they come in with the same sensibility that I come into the room with, which is a full-out sensibility, no pun intended.
Full out! You said it, yes!
And every time he says it, you drink.
Yes.
And I expect it. I wouldn't request it of anyone if I didn't bring it myself. And so those people who come in and have that sort of joy to be in the room creating something, particularly something new, are people I fall in love with. And I'm always looking for ways to work with those people again because I feel like they'll always come through for me.
Do you hear those bubbles, Stephen?
Oh, I hear them.
How sweet it is. So crisp. From the makers of White Girl Rosé and Babe Rosé comes the hilariously delicious Pink Party Rosé with Bubbles. The misfits over at Swish Beverages, which includes Instagram comedian The Fat Jew, have made us all lose our shit over their newest rosé.
Pink Party Rosé is sponsoring In the Room with Stephen and Dana because, well, if there's not a two-drink minimum, are you really in a room?
With notes of honeydew and cantaloupe, this very pink blend of Sauvignon Blanc and Zinfandel is actually pretty good.
It is what I'm drinking all summer. It is a sparkling rosé, gives you all of those bubbles, and is so refreshing for an outdoor summer treat.
Is it what I'm drinking right now, Stephen?
Why? I can tell by its pink hue that it is.
This bottle does not have a face for podcasting. It has a face for Instagram. So buy it, drink it, pose your face off with it, lip sync for your life with it, and tag it at We Brought Wine.
That was like Rosé Bop It. I don't think it's asking too much. It's a very reasonable price point. It is delicious.
It's a very large bottle. I feel like it's bigger than most rosé bottles.
Oh, interesting.
It is a girthy bottom. Yeah, I said it.
There is some quality literature on the label. They know their audience, and they are appealing to you every step of the way. Dana, when do you drink rosé?
All the time.
I think you're supposed to say all day.
Ask me again.
Dana, when do you drink rosé?
All day.
Make every gathering a soiree with Pink Party Rosé. Cheers.
Cheers. Pink.
pink party.
Pink party!
With bubbles.
Avec Bublé.
It's a pink party, baby.
I drink rosé all day, bitch.
Rosé all day.
Rosé, then slay. Rosé, and then I slay. Hey!
Bring me my rosé.
Rosé all day. That's chicken frying in the background.
Pink party!
I wasn't gay until I had a sip of rosé, and then everything changed.
Drunken? Drank. Drunk?
Oh, rosé.
Oh, my fried chicken is ready. Hold on.
You're never gonna make it in this town with a voice like that. Might as well drink up, honey.
Can you talk about becoming Nancy?
Oh, sure.
A little bit?
Yeah, we're gonna premiere at the Alliance this summer. We start rehearsals in July, and we go down there in August and finish up rehearsals. And we'll start here in the city. We'll go down there. We'll be there for, I think it's a 5-week run. It starts in late August, early September, runs to the beginning of October. It is a fabulous novel, which happens to be on this table right here. You can't see it, written by Terry Ronald. I needed something to read. I was in London doing either Kinky Boots or Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, but I was in London. I was coming back, and I had seen all the movies on the plane, and I finished my last book. I thought, what am I going to do for 8 hours? And I ran to the bookstore. I read in the Gay Times a little blurb about this book. I said, oh wow, that sounds, I read about 4 and I said, that one sounds interesting, I'd like to read that. Ran down to the Waterstones, is it Waterstones? And they had one paperback copy left. And I read it.
Poetic.
And on the way, I got off the plane and I called Mark Sendroff, who's my lawyer, and I said, get me the rights to this book. It took us about a year to do it because the book was being courted by Hollywood people to make into a film, but Terry Ronald happened to be a fan of Legally Blonde and Hairspray. He's a musical director in his own right, and when he heard that I had interest in turning it into a musical, he was very excited, and we agreed and met and have become great friends. He's been a wonderful friend of the court. Stiles and Drew are writing the music, Elliot Davis is writing the book. Hal Luftig, Kristen Caskey, Mike Isaacson, who produced Legally Blonde, and Mike and Kristen, who gave me my Broadway debut as a choreographer in Charlie Brown. Mm. Hal, with them as a Broadway debut as a director choreographer with Legally Blonde, are producing. And with the Alliance, that's where we're going to start. So it's really, you know what the book's about?
I don't.
Oh my God, it's such a fabulous story. It's funny.
I'm immediately putting it in my Amazon Prime.
It's funny. It's wonderful. It's charming. It's necessary. Mm. It is a story of a young boy, David Starr, 1979, East Dulwich. He has a best friend who is a black girl. They're not called African American in London. She's a young black girl. It's the race riots which are happening. It's 1979. He auditions for the school musical Oliver. So does Francis, and none of the girls can sing, and so he gets cast as Nancy. He starts to have feelings for the boy who gets cast as Bill Sykes, Maxie Boswell, who's a transfer student, who's also the head footballer. And it's about how the parents and teachers react to what's happening with the kids, as well as what's happening with the kids reacting themselves. But it's also about the parents and teachers and how they deal with the situation all around the rehearsals of Oliver the Musical, which is... You never see Oliver in the show. It's all just little bits and pieces.
Sure.
But it's basically about these two boys and their life. It's a coming of age story. It's so funny and so charming and so witty. And I hope we can get it on
stage. That sounds like sounds like a U-type show.
Yeah, it's really special.
You do have such a good eye for material. How much of that comes to you, and how much do you seek out?
I look for things that I really love. I look for things that I really love. And people send me stuff and I read it and look at it. And if I don't really love it, it's such a job to do a new musical.
It's like shopping. You never love it more than when you're in the store.
Yeah, it's such a job to do a new musical. It takes so much. You see the finished product, but getting there,
it's years.
It's years. Sometimes it's always years. It just depends. Is it 7 years or 3 years? Depends on how fast everybody's writing and everyone's availability. But it is a very special show and special story. I'm excited about it.
I've seen Kinky Boots 5 times. Thank you very much. The most I've seen any Broadway show.
Shout out to Natalie Joy Johnson.
Yeah, shout out to
selling
Natalie.
Those tickets.
NJ.
This is a segment we like to call "What Do You Think Jen Perry Is Doing Right Now?" first time we've ever had this segment. Actually, I know the answer. I think she's at an audition today because she posted a picture.
But it's 6 o'clock. She must be home.
She's kicking it with Wayne.
She's having a glass of wine by now.
She's kicking it with Wayne.
I'm so jealous. She gets to hang with Wayne.
I want to talk about your films for a minute. I mean, this is a deep grab. Drop Dead Gorgeous is choreographed by Jerry Mitchell.
It certainly
with
is.
Pam Remler's little feet.
The dance double for Kirsten Dunst.
That would be my, like, I'm at a party and I don't know anybody.
And Tiffany and Brooke Egan were in school in Minneapolis. And I hired them to be in the film in a segment, tap dancing. And they said they were going to come to New York and go to school. I think they both went to NYU. And now have both been in Hairspray and Legally Blonde and Kinky Boots and other shows for me. And it's just kind of crazy.
How did your choreographing for film happen? How did
I was in the Will Rogers Follies, and I was dancing in the show, and I got a call to go meet a director and a producer at 750 7th Avenue after the show at 11 o'clock. They're filming a scene. They're looking for a choreographer, and they'd like to meet me. So the agent sent me over there. It was 11. I walk in. There's a big red car, sports car. I don't know cars. and I'm going, wow. And this is like the showroom for this expensive sports car, 750. They cleared out the lobby and parked these cars right in the middle of the lobby. I go around the corner. I meet this wonderful man, Marty Brest, and this wonderful producer, Ron Schwari, and they say, we're working on a movie, and we have a dance sequence with a particular star, and we're having real trouble, and he's taking lessons, but we're not choreographing anything, and we need help. Would you come to the dance lesson tomorrow? And I said, sure. So I go to Dance Sport, and there is Al Pacino taking an authentic tango class. And I go, well, he's taking class, but he's not learning steps that he can then repeat on camera in a scene. So Paul Pellicoro was working with him as a tango instructor, and I came on as a choreographer and put pieces of the steps together and worked, you know, with the Laurel and Hardy, really. I said, it's got to be repeatable for Al Pacino. He's playing a blind guy. He's got to do 4/8 in a row. 42 times from different and so we worked on it, and Gabrielle Anwar didn't show up until like a day before filming, but she was a dancer, and we put it together, and that was the first film I worked on as a choreographer. And obviously, because the film was very successful and that tango became such a big part of the story, I got a lot of calls from a lot of stars who were dancing in films and wanted someone there to help. Meryl Streep, One True Thing, Kevin Kline, In and Out.
One of my favorite films.
Hilarious.
Of all time.
And both of them, amazing. Meet Joe Black, Anthony Hopkins, Slow Dancing with Claire Forlani.
Yeah.
And then Drop Dead Gorgeous, The Object of My Affection with Jennifer Aniston and Paul Rudd. That whole dance sequence was created. It wasn't on the page. Nick Heitner came to me and said, I want to do his dance sequence. I don't know what to do. What do you got? And I said, well, we could go through like dance class. And so we did. We created that with the cinematographer it wasn't on the page, and then filmed it.
You're such a goddamn collaborator.
It was really wonderful. And then Hairspray Live, which isn't a film, but it is a film.
Yeah.
Like a film.
I mean, talk about that more. You're doing a musical, which you know how to do so well, and it's being filmed live for broadcast. How is that different?
Well, I mean, the choreography was one thing. I knew the choreography, I knew all that, but it was all the information about how to make it work. How many people, where are they going to stand? How are we going to get them from this lot to that lot in the time when you go from Good Morning Baltimore to and they're running into the studio and they're running on golf carts and, you know, how, all of that stuff. But Kenny was amazing, who directed it. And Craig and Neil, God bless Craig, were spectacular. Mark and Scott, of course. And all of the stars, they were all game for it. Most of them I worked with at one point before.
Sure.
So it was just fun. It was a really
fun.
And Harvey, you know, it was a wonderful experience.
You and Harvey go back quite some time.
Well, Hairspray was the beginning, and then Lacage, and then Kinky, and Hairspray Live, and who knows what's next.
He's such a good book writer. I mean, he's obviously he can perform.
He's one of the best we have, if not the best. And he knows musicals better than anyone.
And he loves musicals.
Yes, he does. We all do. We love
Come on.
You love Broadway.
You have to.
Big time.
You have to. Yeah. If you don't love it, it won't love you back.
Thanks a lot. Now with the garbage.
It's like seeping into me. And I'm like, now do I love Broadway? I do. I do.
I actually said almost exactly that about Kinky Boots, kind of in my ode to Kinky Boots on the closing. I kind of realized it was maybe the first show to love me back as an audience member.
I say to the casts when I travel, wherever I see a show, I say, you have the opportunity to send a tsunami of love out to the audience with this. But the amazing thing is that if you do it, and you do it full out with your heart, completely in it, that tsunami is going to come right back and get you. And you feel that on stage as a performer.
Yes.
Because the message affects people in a very big way. Kinky Boots happened at the perfect time. The perfect time. Gay marriage wasn't a part of this.
Yep.
There were people who just didn't know how to accept themselves, let alone a character like Lola. And that's what the whole show's about. Accept yourself and you'll accept others too. Change the world when you change your mind. And, you know, it's very basic and very simple, but it's very necessary. And it's necessary again and again still, even though the show's closed. There are going to be so many people doing the show, so many
companies
already popping up because the message is such a positive message and a message that's needed in those little pockets of America more so than in anywhere.
Thank God for the Muni.
It's such a fun family show too, with an edge, you know? I think it's going to live
Cindy's
a long time,
music is
obviously.
Spectacular.
It's such a good score. It's not just good music. It's not just good songs. It is a good, cohesive score, underscoring every...
Do you remember when Cyndi Lauper had her reality TV show and parts of those episodes were her trying to figure out how to write this musical?
I don't know.
I was obsessed with it.
I never watched that whole
show.
She's
like, no, I can't do her, Cindy's but I mean, it was hilarious because it didn't exist yet. I'm like, oh, this show, she's struggling so hard. Good luck. I mean, it was so funny.
Yeah.
So funny. Now I have to get a call. I wish I could do it right now, but I can't. You've worked with rock stars.
I have.
Did you feel like that was in your future when you started Broadway?
No. Definitely not.
I mean, Cyndi.
Cyndi Lauper. Brian Adams.
Brian Adams. Gloria Estefan.
Gloria Estefan.
Come on.
Now, Brendan, who was in Kinky Boots. I didn't really work with him. The boys worked with him, but he was sensational. Lots of them in Kinky Boots. We had a lot of performers who came in. David. Brendan, Tyler, oh God.
I know. I'm just like Wayne Brady.
Yeah, Wayne Brady.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's a rock star in his own right.
Yeah, he certainly is.
Todrick.
Todrick, that's right. I saw him do it.
I did. Did you have to bridge that gap for them into working in theater?
Wayne had done theater before, a lot of theater. Yeah. He had a show in Vegas when I did Peep Show in Vegas. I knew him from there. I knew him actually from a little Disney movie I did called Geppetto with Drew Carey, and Wayne was in it.
Seen it.
And I choreographed that, and that's where I first met Wayne.
I saw that too.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus,
yes,
right?
The Blue Fairy.
We
cut.
Sold a poster at the Kinky Boots table of
by
Broadway.
Schwartz.
Full circle,
there
ladies and gentlemen. Geppetto.
Yeah.
Write that down.
Wayne had theater experience. The others didn't necessarily on Broadway, but they came ready, willing, and able. And that's half the battle,
yeah.
Right? If they've got the talent to sing it and act it, the moves were easy enough to teach to anybody. Really, they are.
Mm-hmm.
And they just got to want to be in it. And there was something very special that happened with that show at the theater because of the message. It seeped into the walls. Literally, it seeped into the building.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't work on Kinky Boots if you were an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because nobody would deal with it. So everybody came into that theater I really mean this. In all the shows I've done, I've never had a company that has remained so positive, so long, and with so many changes of the guard, and so helpful to each of those people who came in. The cast, the company embraced every single person who came in. And again, that tsunami, it went both ways. And it was truly a spectacular 6 years at that theater, really.
Congrats.
Thank you.
It was already
heartbreaking to see that marquee change. Just like,
Moulin Rouge is going to be spectacular.
Yes.
Also. And Aaron, my buddy Aaron, I can't wait to cheer him on.
The pictures look out of control. I did not get to go to Boston to see it, but those photos are fierce.
Yeah, it looks like Darren McClain did a great job.
Can't wait.
So you have 87 Tony Awards. Might be miss.
87.
I counted. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I have 6 losses and 2 wins.
Woo! You have some drama desks, Olivier nominations.
Yes.
Fantastic.
They're all fun. They're just fun. The first one will always remain. The first nomination, the Full Monty, will remain as the most shocking and surprising. Right. I was working with Mark Shaman on the set of Marcy X, and with Lisa Kudrow, the Ancox, Jane Krakowski, and Sherry Renee Scott, filming a song called In the Butt.
With Stephen and Dana?
In the Butt.
What? In the Butt.
In the Butt.
What? In the Butt.
So basically,
I believe
Lisa Kudrow's father he's a big multi-billionaire or whatever, and he has a record company that is in charge of this really dirty rap artist.
Oh my God.
And he has a heart attack, and his daughter, who is a Jewish American princess, has to take over the record label, and she has to make friends with this rap artist and get him to not say such dirty things. Of course, we're at the performance and he's singing this song in the butt. It was hysterically funny, and Paul Rudnick wrote it. It was,
oh my God,
we need to watch this immediately.
Tonight.
It was literally, anyway. It was one of those. But anyway, we were sitting
genre.
There, and Mark Shaman, of course, the king of computers,
yes.
is on the computers the day of the Tony nominations, and I get nominated for the Full Monty, and he says, "You got nominated." And
that's how you found out?
Yeah, I found out. And I was like, "Oh my God!" And I literally didn't even think about it. I wasn't thinking about the Tony nominations. I wasn't thinking about I could possibly get nominated. I don't remember. I was just focusing. I was filming this big number that day, and I was on the set. And that was the first nomination.
Full
I'll never
Monty.
Forget that moment.
Who announced your first win? Like, who gave you your first Tony?
I think it was, who played Sweet Charity, the revival?
Christina Applegate?
Christina Applegate. I think it was...
Good pull.
I think it was Christina Applegate and two of the... no, it was Christina Applegate and Tommy Toon? Or maybe it was just her. It was just her. It was... I know that nomination. This is a very interesting story and a funny story. There were four nominees. Myself for Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Myself for La Caja Full. Wayne Cilento for Sweet Charity. And Casey Nicklaw for Spamalot.
What a year.
Now, yourself?
I was nominated twice. And usually, when you get nominated twice, you never win because you split the vote.
Sure.
But that's what Jules Fisher told me. But the story that's funny about it is that I was choreographing Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. We were at the Old Globe. I was also supposed to choreograph Spamalot. And Spamalot and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels were suddenly on the exact same track for Broadway. Mm-hmm. Same opening in the spring, da-da-da-da. And I couldn't do it. And Bill Haber was producing with Bob Boyette. And they called me and said, we can't seem to land on a choreographer. Who should we hire? And I said, well, I was part of Dance Break, which is a program run by the SDC Foundation to introduce young people who want to choreograph to producers. And Casey had done two numbers in Dance Break, and they were spectacular. And I said, you know what? You should have Casey meet with Mike Nichols, because Casey just did two fabulous numbers. I think he's brilliant. I think it'll happen. I think he's perfect for Mike. He's been through Broadway. He's not a kid. He understands musicals. He knows how to tech a show. Have him meet with Casey. Met with Casey at lunch and hired Casey. Casey left two bottles of wine and a card at my apartment. Bill and Bob sent me a Steuben glass vase. Everybody was happy. Cut to the Tony Awards. Mike and Casey, myself, and Jack O'Brien were all nominated. Mike wins director. I win choreographer for La Cage, not even Dirty or Spamalot. Mm-hmm. So it was just such a weird sort of how... the world works.
Welcome to Broadway.
And Casey has since evaporated. And, evaporated. We don't know where he's been.
Not working at all, but...
Someone look him up.
Absolutely love him to death and think the world of him.
If that's not what the Broadway community is all about...
Pay it forward.
I don't...
Yeah. But, you know, the awards are fabulous, but they're also an award.
Work.
And I think it was Frank Langella... gave a wonderful speech about winning when he won a Tony, and something about this is fabulous, but tomorrow it's just another day.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank you for the acknowledgement, but it's tricky because how do you compare the work?
Absolutely.
I think that's really the hardest thing.
Absolutely.
I've voted for stuff. Sometimes I'm just like,
yeah.
B. If you have
maybe
to guess.
Maybe C this time.
Listeners, we have entered into an illicit partnership with the folks over at Broadway Crew.
Broadway who?
Broadway Crew! Broadway Crew is the trusted name in New York City when it comes to Broadway and off-Broadway tickets.
With a full-time presence at TKTS and Times Square, come see them to get the scoop on the best.
Go get your scoop!
Honey, two scoops. Come see them to get the scoop on the best tickets at the best prices. Their mission is to match every person to their show and to raise you up and elevate the art of in-person theater promotion.
They're offering in-the-room listeners $55 off tickets to King Kong on Broadway. You can use code KK as in King Kong, PNM as in perfectly normal mammogram 928 only at telecharge.com.
We saw it and it was a spectacle, and I went in skeptical, and this skeptic was turned into a spectic.
Okay. Ooh!
Follow them on Instagram at Broadway Crew or check them out online at BroadwayCrew.com.
I would like to ask about choreography in general.
Yeah.
As someone who maybe is listening to this podcast, who auditions for things, and choreography is kind of scary, do you have a gentle suggestion of how to make it not scary?
You know, there are different types of choreography, and there are different types of choreographers. And choreographers can be very scary people because they can be very demanding and very, do it again! You know?
Well, and especially to maybe a non-dancer in a room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
An actor who moves.
I had the pleasure of working with some of the greatest choreographers when I was young. Agnes DeMille, Ron Field, Michael Bennett, Jerry Robbins, just to name a few.
Yeah, seriously.
And
I'm going to wedding.
Choreographers, dancers used to come into the room, say nothing, learn, and do what the choreographer said. And it's different. The world's changed. It's evolved. The creative process changes. And every choreographer, like I said, is different. But dance comes from a very disciplined beginning. You know, you go to the bar every day and you learn, you take bar or you take class, and it's a discipline, right? It's one of the three forms of musical theater, acting, dancing, and singing, that fades the quickest if you don't do the upkeep, right? The steps fade quickly, the moves fade quickly, the mind fades quickly, the ability to pick up quickly fades quickly.
Yes.
So you have to constantly challenge yourself in dance in order to stay at the top. Some people just do that by constantly working. Others do that by constantly going to class and working occasionally. So when I have an audition for dancers, if I'm looking for hard-ass dancing, I give hard-ass combinations. If I'm looking for movers, it's a little bit more, I'm a little bit more relaxed. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately, for me, dancing is part of the character, right? If Jerry Robbins once said, you know, the steps in West Side Story are nothing like the steps in Fiddler on the Roof, because the characters are different.
Yeah.
So your job as a choreographer is to create the steps that fit the character, not to do just a step for any character. Now, Fosse was an exception to that rule, right? Because he had 12 steps that worked for every character. And spectacularly, right? Spectacularly. Yes. So it just depends on who the choreographer is and how they interpret the moves, you know. And he was brilliant. He was brilliant. And I just feel that, for me, I'm always looking for the character's truth in the choreography. So that's what I'm looking for, and trying to use that to tell the story.
So if you're auditioning for something and you can inform yourself about what the character you're going in for.
I'd rather see somebody make a big mistake and go for it than somebody, you know.
This is how my character falls.
I can't do it. Because you can do it. And I can. My job as a director and choreographer is to get you there. When you come into the room, your job is to show me how close you can get without my help. Right? And then I have to make a decision. Can I get them the rest of the way? Or is it going to be too hard for me to get them up to, say, the pace to the person next to them? Or is the person next to them who's doing it perfect doesn't have the wit that I want? You know, when I was casting the angels, I had two angels who could dance the roof off the place, Paul Kanin and Charlie Sutton. And then I had four angels who moved very well and sang the shit out of the score, right? Now, Paul and Charlie can sing, but they dance the shit out of the piece. Yeah. And the others were great movers who sang the shit out of the piece. But I needed, and they had sense of, all of them had a sense of humor. I was looking for, I was looking for sass, wit, flash, great voices, great dancing that I could get there, and but individuality. Those six angels are all individuals. They each have a moment to step out in the show. And that, I love that part too.
Yes, I'm glad you brought up Paul Kanin, past guest of this podcast last year, and he told us all about the original production and all these. And I think what you were just saying about the movement telling the story and creating these moves for the purpose of the story and for the character and not just for your arsenal of dance moves that you made up.
Yeah. Well, the moves are meaningless if you don't understand what's behind the moves. They're just moves, right?
Absolutely.
So I as a kid, of course, was in love with West Side Story. When I was 12, 13, 14, I must have seen the movie 100 times. And I wanted to do those moves. And I would do them over and over and imitate what I saw wherever I saw the movie. Finally, I was in a production when I was 14, and the choreographer of that production did some of the moves from the movie. And then I did a production when I was 17 with the Young Americans. I was still in high school, and I toured the United States in the West Side Story, and Jimmy Bates choreographed it, who had been Baby John in one of the major productions, and he taught us some of the original choreography. So I learned more of the original choreography. Cut to working with Jerry Robbins, and then finally learning it from Jerry Robbins, and learning what was behind every move and every step. Suddenly I had the glossary that I was missing that explained the steps. And so part of my process, the internet has changed our world.
Yes.
As performers, because we
for better or worse.
For better, because we can go immediately and see a visual aid of how it is supposed to be performed. Let's say we're doing the Cher show and we want to see how Cher performed. So I'm sure Stephanie looked at old videos. I'm sure she looked at old movies, at old things that you can find. So as a choreographer, my work, the MTV showing of Legally Blonde, it's all there. It's all there. And if a kid wants to copy my choreography, they can. But Google Courtney Take Your Break on YouTube. You'll see. Oh. You'll see 38 productions copying that little section of the show.
Oh, yeah.
Even where a boy plays the shop girl. So it's brilliant and it's flattering. But what I wanted to do with the original production was help them understand what I was doing, what was the thought, not just from me, from the performers who performed in it, Laura Bell Bundy, Andy, Orfeh, they're all on the original production of Legally Blonde talking about what it was to create
it's
a character.
Fabulous.
So what I wanted to do was create a tool that would show you the steps, but also coach you and collaborate with you on making your production the very best it could be at your school, your community theater, wherever you're doing it. And so we're doing that with shows, lots of shows, not just my shows, but a lot of shows. It also protects the choreographer's intellectual property, right?
Sure.
Which is a lovely thing to do too. But more importantly, it is, I'm hoping, educating kids who might be the next Broadway choreographer about, it's not just about making up a step, it's what, for me, it's the storytelling that goes along with it, and the character development, hopefully.
Sure, just the education base of that.
It's,
I mean, it
the
fills
recipes
my heart.
That make the cookbook.
Think about your high school drama teacher. Like, we didn't do a lot of musicals because our drama head was not musically savvy, and also the idea of choreographing
a
bunch of high schoolers
sounds
more difficult than.
And the gym teacher ends up with the job, and so what do I do, right? What do I do?
You're taking the stress off.
Yeah.
You're saying, here's
what you
here's
can
this thing.
Like, for instance, in the Hairspray, I remember one of the things, meaning collaborating with them, I explained, I said, no, on Broadway I had 10 nicest kids in town. You may have 25 in your school. So use them all. I said, take the step and make your own formation. Make your own circles, make your own thing, but these are the steps. Use the steps.
Sure.
Here's what the steps meant. This was from the 60s, 1962. This was a pony. This was a this was a that. Use the steps, but now make your own formations. Make it work for your production.
Well, you know it's my dream to learn the jump rope combination.
You can buy the video and you can learn it at your own speed and pace.
Thank God.
I mean, that's the thing is we get all of these letters and comments from teachers and students in Instagram posts, and they're on cloud nine because they feel like they're doing the Broadway stuff, and they've actually been challenged to, you know, rise to the occasion and learn it as best they can.
And Broadway becomes something they feel they can reach because here's the Broadway choreography. You're doing Broadway choreography.
Yeah.
First time I did Chorus Line was the first time I did that. And I thought, oh my God, I get to do the real thing.
Where's my Tony?
What? But I mean, it made a huge impact on me. I wish I had that when I was a kid.
Yeah, me too.
Come on. We have another segment. It's rapid fire questions.
Rapid fire.
And
the not so rapid fire is like,
everyone
I like
does
to call
stretch
it
them out, but feel free to not stretch them out. What was your last frivolous purchase?
Last frivolous purchase. In Japan.
Of course.
Souvenirs.
Anything. Last first thing you did.
Last first thing I did. I made a new recipe.
Ooh, pin. I'll ask you about it later. Hot dogs or hamburgers?
Hamburgers.
Sparkling or flat?
Sparkling.
Who's your favorite Mama Rose and Gypsy? I know that's the meanest question on the list.
That's a very mean question, really. I'm going to say Bernadette, who I worked with.
Memorable onstage mishap, either as a performer or you're out in the house watching something in previews and...
Me. Will Rogers Follies, end of act one, opening night, I dropped my suitcase.
What are you currently obsessed with?
I am obsessed with becoming Nancy.
What was your high school mascot?
The Redskins.
If you had to change your first name, what would you choose?
Chad.
Ooh. What's your drag name?
Isn't it your dog and your home address or something?
I think the equation is your first pet and the first street you lived on.
Skippy, or one that
Skippy
you just
Lake Boulevard.
Take it. Who is somebody you would love to work with that you have not yet?
Oh, someone I'd love to work with that I have not yet. Ooh. Kit Harington from Game of Thrones. Who I've met twice. I saw him in a play and he was spectacular.
Didn't see that coming.
The world is your oyster.
Favorite book or author?
Terry Ronald.
Sweet or savory?
Savory.
Can you cook?
Really well.
That gorgeous kitchen. Maggie Smith or Judy Dench?
Maggie Smith, who I choreographed in Curtain Call.
Well, another this film. Podcast is okay, over because both hosts are dead.
But I love them both.
I just passed out.
It's another mean question. What was the last subway line that you rode?
Last subway line, E.
What's your astrological sign?
Capricorn.
You can have lunch with three people, not Broadway people. One living, one dead, one fictional.
Fred Astaire, not a Broadway person, but is a Broadway person, really. Fred Astaire, Hillary Clinton, and Mayor Pete.
We need a fictional person.
Oh, a fictional person.
Oh, but I'll take both of them, because good answers.
A fictional person, Betty Boop.
What is a performance that inspired you as a kid?
As a kid? Gene Kelly in every film he ever did.
And the last question. Do you know what the most beautiful thing in the world is, Jerry?
A shoe.
Well done.
Well done. We have one more segment.
We do. We ask everybody.
Hi-ho! Hi-ho! Hi-ho!
There are seven very well-known dwarves in history. If you were the eighth, what would your name be?
Full out
dwarf.
Yes! Oh, that was perfect. Nice. I didn't even see that coming.
I didn't either. I thought he was just going to say Jerry.
Or like
ends in a
joyous. Or
joyous
gorgeous.
Dwarf.
Gorgeous dwarf. Gorge dwarf.
Full out dwarf.
Full out dwarf. Duh. Why wouldn't it be that? What else do we have? We don't want to keep you. This is kind of time.
I have two things. I checked my list. You choreographed Camp, which goes down in any theater nerds.
I oversaw Camp. I'm Michelle Lynch really did the work. Michelle Lynch, who was my associate on Hairspray and on a lot of shows. But when Todd asked me to do it, I said, absolutely. But I was already contracted to do something else during the filming process. So I worked with everybody during the rehearsal period.
Mm-hmm.
And then Michelle went to the shoot up at the camp and did it all. But she did it all.
Yeah. How was that? I mean, you have baby Anna Kendrick. You have baby Sasha Allen. You have baby Robin DeSouza.
So Anna Kendrick, right?
Stephen Cutts.
Anna Kendrick. I mean, all of them. Spectacular. Anna Kendrick was 13?
Sure.
I think something maybe. So I didn't even knew she knew who I was. Winning the Tony Award for Kinky Boots. I'm backstage. I just walk off the stage and I've got the Tony Award in my hand and the cast is like, yeah, because they're in the wings getting ready to go on. And I'm walking around the edge and here comes Anna Kendrick in this gown. Jerry, congratulations. And I'm like, how does she know who I am? How does she know who I am? She's Anna Kendrick. And I went, and then I walk past her and go, oh yeah. Remember the film Camp?
Remember when you sang Ladies Who Lunch?
I mean, to be fair, you were just probably on set with a coffee.
My partner Ricky was in the last 5 years. He danced in the last 5 years.
Yes, he did.
All choreographed. So it all worked out.
It's all a little community. Well, thank you for being like a semi-sponsor of this podcast. A lot of people in your world have already been on. We talk about you incessantly. Not really, but kind of. just because a lot of Kinky Boots people and a lot of Legally Blonde. And
yeah, I mean, Natalie is who brought us together, and Legally Blonde brought me to Natalie.
You know my Natalie story? You know my Natalie hiring Natalie story for the first time for Legally Blonde?
No, please tell it.
Donna
Vivino
mm-hmm.
was originally playing Enid in the readings of Kinky Boots and
Legally Blonde.
And 2 weeks before we were supposed to go into rehearsal, she for the Broadway show to go to San mm-hmm. Francisco out of town, she pulled out because she got something else. Maybe it was Wicked. I don't remember what she got, but she got something else. I don't think it was Wicked. I think it was something else. It was a big role for her. And I was distraught and beside myself and, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? So Telsey sets up some gals to come in and we're sitting in the room and we're seeing the girls and they're coming in one at a time and there's quite a long list. And Natalie Joy comes in and I had seen her in Bear, I think.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
And didn't think too much of her from that because I wasn't a fan. Up there, but she came in and she was unbelievable. And she walked, I said, would you just wait outside for 1 minute? She said, sure. And she walked out the door and I went like this. I went, the audition's over. I'm hiring that girl. I said, does anybody feel differently? And they all were like, we love her. I said, I don't want to see anybody else. I got 2 weeks. This girl is Enid. She's going to play the part. And I went to the door. I opened the door. I said, honey, I said, will you play Enid on Broadway for me? And she went, she started crying.
Of course
yeah.
she did.
And I went, great. I'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks. Oh. And I closed the door. And I hired her on the spot. I love doing that. When you see somebody and you know it's it's the perfect fit. You just go with it, right?
She has said on this podcast that the most nervous she's ever been on a stage was when Michelle Obama was at Kinky Boots, and she always has a rap. She always has a rap in your shows. And she had to rap in front of the First Lady. And she said she got through it, but she was never more nervous than that moment.
We love her. She's kind of our third co-host.
Yeah, she pops in from time to time.
She's the best.
Frequent correspondent.
The best.
Where can people find you? Online?
Yes. Do you have anything to plug that we haven't already? And how can people follow you and keep up with you?
You can follow my shows and everything I'm busy doing on Instagram, JammyProd. On Instagram, Jemmy Prod.
Mm-hmm.
And go see Pretty Woman.
It's Pretty Woman.
The Niederlander.
I have to see that. My friend Matt Farcher's in that.
Matt, Orfe.
Past guest of the podcast. We did Natalie.
And the amazing Samantha. And the incredible Eric. Original Kinky Boots member.
Oh.
They're all spectacular. They're spectacular.
Natalie was in the room for our Orfe interview, and we played Paulette Roulette. And I printed out sides. And we had to see which Paulette jumped in with the correct line first. It was the most fun I've ever had. And on that note,
yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For
happy to do
allowing
that.
Us into your room.
Here we are.
Gorgeous it's apartment.
A little office.
Gorgeous.
Greg Barnes.
We're
Greg
surrounded
Barnes.
By
Lola
legendary
L.
items.
In the Room with Stephen and Dana is produced by Stephen Farazee
and Dana Craig. Special thanks to Joel Wagoner for tinkling the ivories on our theme song. Hit him up at joelwagoner.com.
We apologize, and you're welcome. We'd also like to thank Jesse Wiener, W-I-E-N-E-R, for our jazzy original music sprinkled throughout each episode.
You can find him at jessewiener.com.
Last but certainly not least, we'd like to thank Kevin Thomas Garcia for taking all of our ridiculous photos. You can find him online at ktgnyc.com. We are all over the internet on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at In The Room Pod.
Follow us, like us, share us, pimp us out.
And don't forget to subscribe to In The Room Podcast. We everywhere, so subscribe. And thank you so much for listening.
Thank you so much.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.